Brian Lehrer on WNYC, Steven Pinker, and Will Shortz, my guests this hour, among other things, with Will, the Puzzle Master, later on. We'll talk about this new thing that's in the Times and other papers called Ken-Ken. Apparently, if people like Sudoku, they're supposed to like Ken-Ken. It's a little different, though, and that'll be a fun conversation, and we'll talk to Steven Pinker about his dabbling in personal genomics and whether you want to find out the genetic origins of some of your personality traits. Now, Steven Pinker is here to talk about the Personal Genome Project. He says it's an act of basic research, not personal discovery, but curious people are using it as both, and not just to find out about their risk of disease, but also the genetic roots of our personalities. He delved into his own by taking this test, and he wrote about it in the New York Times Magazine recently. Maybe you read that cover story. Steven Pinker is psychology professor at Harvard and the author of The Stuff of Thought, Language as a Window into Human Nature, among other writings. Professor Pinker, welcome back to WNYC. Thank you for coming on for this.
Oh, my pleasure.
Some of the traits that you say the Genome Project might be able to tell us about include our level of curiosity, ambition, empathy, whether we're drawn toward novelty or security, whether we're more likely to be nasty or nice, and whether we're more comfortable with social challenges or mechanical ones. Are there really identifiable genes for all those things?
There aren't identifiable single genes, but remember, we've got at least 20,000 genes and lots of other information packed into our genome that determines how and when those genes get expressed. And a general rule of thumb in behavioral genetics is that pretty much any psychological trait that you can measure will show a heritable component. That is, there's reason to think that it is influenced in part by the genes. We know this from studies, for example, of identical twins who were separated at birth, brought up in different families, sometimes even in different countries, but who show similarities, sometimes astonishing similarities, when they're tracked down and tested as adults. But even if traits are influenced by genes, it may not mean that we're going to find a single gene that that installs that trait, say a sense of humor or an interest in gadgets. It may be that you need a particular set of 1,500 genes, for example, to have a sense of humor, each of which influences the trait in a subtle way. So genes as a whole, yes, individual genes, maybe, maybe not.
So let's take an example, because as you write, the genomics testing company 23andMe will give you scores for 10 personality traits, I think it was 10, that they think the science can tell you about pretty well, and 21 others for which it's more iffy. And you learned that you have a genetic makeup that makes you more likely to be an extrovert and to seek novelty and sensation. So do they say, well, this, you know, do those genes have names? Do they tell you this? You have this over here and that over there, and this is why you're outgoing?
The genes do have names, although they're acronyms and numbers. They're not there's not like a novelty seeking gene that goes by that name. And I should mention the 23andMe in their
somebody's going to name all these genes, right? I mean, outside the science, it's like the names of drugs,
right?
You know, somebody's going to start naming these genes things like love me gene.
23andMe report, most of the traits are actually physical traits, like lactose intolerance or reaction to alcohol, whether you have fast twitch muscle tissue. The personality traits, most of them you have to do a little digging yourself. They also give you the raw data of the gene variants that you have, and then you can correlate that with what's been reported in the literature. And that's how I discovered that I have a gene that's been associated with novelty seeking, although not extroversion. I know actually from old-fashioned personality tests and from my own introspection that I'm neither particularly extroverted or particularly introverted. But I do like new stuff, and I think it may not be a coincidence that one of my gene variants has been associated with novelty seeking. I had to dig that out myself.
And I think our listeners can handle a little bit of the biology of how this would work. How does a gene or a set of genes make you a risk taker or a novelty seeker? Can you say about how it works biologically?
In many cases, we don't know. In some cases, it usually by acting on neurotransmitter systems. These are the chemicals that seep from neuron to neuron in the brain, and it's the way in which neurons pass messages from one to another. There are many places in that chain of transmission where genetic differences can matter. There can be more or fewer receptors for, that is, the little locks that the keys fit into. There can be different amounts of the chemicals that mop up the neurotransmitters and recycle them, in the same way that drugs can affect personality and behavior by altering the brain chemistry. The genes can change the probabilities as the brain is developing in the womb.
Now, for other people who take the test, obviously this is your field as an evolutionary psychologist, so you were curious for professional as well as personal reasons. But for other people who take the test, what's the practical application of knowing thyself so well? Is there an opportunity for self-improvement, or is there a risk of maybe depression from concluding there is no free will? Or what would you say when you find out that there are genetic determinants of some of our personality traits?
In all of the cases, the effect of the genes at best is probabilistic, and often it's very small. And this is true even for physical traits, such as susceptibility to diabetes, to say nothing of psychological traits. So there's no gene that will guarantee that you'll be outgoing or introverted. And even ones that make you a little bit more likely to be introverted are still kind of iffy. Again, we know that those traits are genetically influenced by studies of twins and adoptees, but there you're looking at thousands of genes acting all together. An individual gene still doesn't tell you a whole lot. Now, there are cases where I think genetic testing is extraordinarily valuable. Testing for inherited diseases that you could pass on to a child. There's another company called Counsyl with a Y in California that does family genomics so that you can see if you're a carrier for any of more than 100 heritable diseases. And in fact, I discovered that I'm a carrier for one of them. It doesn't affect me, but if I were to have children with another carrier, we'd have a 1 in 4 chance of having a child with a rather awful disease. And there are some cases, and more and more will be discovered, where there are conditions, say heart conditions or allergies to drugs or sensitivity to drugs, that if they're not detectable now, they will very soon be. So I think personal genomics is going to have a huge impact, and we're just seeing the very early stages of it.
So something like that medical condition that you said you're a carrier of, do you think it would become routine in the future for people to get tested before they get married to find out if, you know, they match up in a way that creates a 25% chance for their offspring?
Absolutely. And of course, Ashkenazic Jews have been doing this for decades by having themselves tested for Tay-Sachs. I was tested when I was a college student 30 years ago and found that I was negative. And so that's long been accepted. I think what family genomics is going to do is allow you to test for 125 or so conditions instead of just one of them. But yes, I think that it's something that that every couple should do, especially if they come from groups such as Ashkenazi Jews who for reasons we don't completely understand, are carriers for an awful lot of genetic diseases.
You mentioned twin studies a couple of times and how they show the power of genes. But I wonder, don't they also show the power of the environment? I mean, to take an extreme case, if you take two identical twin babies and one is brought up in a loving home and the other is subjected to constant abuse and neglect, the abused child is statistically much more likely to wind up a schizophrenic or a criminal, isn't he?
Not a schizophrenic or a criminal across the board. I think there certainly are effects of pathological abuse and neglect. But within the normal range, parental treatment doesn't really predict a lot of or hardly any psychopathology. Certainly, if you have severe sexual abuse, physical abuse, neglect, that leaves scars, just as any complex system, I think, can be harmed by abuse or neglect. But it's surprising how resilient people can be and how hard it's been to identify contributors from the family to individual differences in personality and psychopathology. It's
really
not all genetic. We know that, but the non-genetic part is still something of a mystery. We can't pinpoint it to anything that happens in the family short of criminal neglect and abuse.
Here's the thing I wonder, too, about twin studies, and I've never looked it up, but maybe you know, if they've ever tested birth order, which seems to be such a powerful determinant of personality in the rest of the world, or maybe you think it's not. But if you take separated identical twins, and one is raised as a first child, and the other is raised as a second or third, I would tend to guess they come out fairly differently. Do you know if there's literature on that one way or the other?
Not on separated twins that I know of, although studies of birth order, the best controlled ones have not found differences in personality outside the home. That is, birth order affects how you relate to your parents, how you relate to your brother or sister, how what traits they think you have when you interact with them.
Huh.
But when it comes to people outside the home, there is virtually no predictive power to birth order, contrary to what almost everyone believes.
Yeah, and these theories then that second-borns tend to be the great revolutionaries of the world, just as they were more revolutionary toward their parents, you think that's a lot of hooey?
Well, there was some evidence for that in Frank Soloway's book, Born to Rebel. But I think that subsequent studies have not supported that with independent data. So I have become more skeptical of that particular claim. Although well, it's not hooey. There was evidence, but it doesn't seem to have been borne out.
We're almost out of time. How did it affect you to learn some of these gene sets that you have and their correlations with your personality?
Well, there weren't a lot of personality-relevant genes. That's lagged behind genes for simple traits like lactose intolerance or the ability to taste the bitter substance in coffee. Even for the ones that are connected to personality, to be honest, I interpreted the genetic data based on what I think I know about myself rather than the other way around. Because, again, these are statistical, and so just like the physical gene that I have that says that I have an increased risk for baldness. Now, I'm not bald, and so I say, well, I'm in the minority of people who have the gene and aren't bald. You always have that option in interpreting a probabilistic gene. And in cases where the gene suggests a trait that I just don't think I have, I say, well, I'm one of the many exceptions. So it's not at this point, a hugely powerful tool for self-discovery.
Interesting. All right. Very interesting. Steven Pinker, who wrote the very well-read cover story, maybe you saw it too, in the New York Times Magazine recently about genetics and personality. And he is psychology professor at Harvard University and author of The Stuff of Thought, Language as a Window into Human Nature. Great to talk to you again. Thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we have Puzzle Master Will Shorts coming up next to talk about the Crossword Championship he's going to preside over in the city this week, and that new puzzle that they have in the Times and other papers now called Ken Ken, and more with Will Shorts. Stay with us.